You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The recent publication of Michael Wolff's Fire and Fury has focused our attention on President Trump's fitness to hold office. Wolff claims White House aides harbor deep concerns about the president's mental health, although the same aides publicly deny that. But the question about Trump's mental fitness predate the Wolff book. Late last year, a group of psychiatrists and mental health experts spelled out their concerns in a book titled The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump. Their position is Trump's mental state is a danger to the nation, and they felt it's their duty to warn Americans. Dr. Arash Javanbacht disagrees. He's an assistant professor of psychiatry at Wayne State University. In an editorial published in today's Washington Post, he argues psychiatrists should not be involved in presidential politics. Dr. Javanbacht, welcome. And why do you disagree with your professional colleagues who believe it's their duty to question the president's mental state?
So if you allow me to talk a little bit about the background of this argument. So there are two sides to the argument traditionally. One side is basically rooted in what happened in the 1964 election when Fact magazine sent a poll to some psychiatrists asking about the mental health of Barry Goldwater. And that led to a lawsuit against the Fact magazine, and then the American Psychiatric Association, or APA, released a statement mentioning as an ethical rule that a psychiatrist cannot make a public comment about a person they have not examined and they don't have consent from the person or legal authorities.
So that's called the Goldwater rule.
Exactly, Goldwater rule.
Yes.
But on the other side of the aisle, the group of psychiatrists that have come out over the past 1 year and have raised concerns about the mental health of the president rely on what is called, quote unquote, duty to warn. And duty to warn basically is a rule that if I am seeing a patient and I'm in a doctor-patient relationship with that person, and that person has a chance of or endorses to me that they are going to go harm someone, I have the obligation to inform the potential victim and the legal authorities. And the APA's stance is that, well, here there's no doctor-patient relationship. And that person has not been examined by the psychiatrist. Because this conversation has been going on for the past 1 year.
Very vigorously.
Yes. My approach is from a cost-benefit approach. Regardless of the ethical aspects and regardless of whether the president does or does not have a diagnosis, my approach is, what good does this do and what bad does this do? And I have a lot of concerns about the potential harm it can do to us.
All right, talk about the potential harm.
So the potential harm, at one level, one of the biggest issues with mental health and psychiatry has been the stigma over centuries. Patients have been demonized, have been categorized into the bad people, have been marginalized, they have been embarrassed to talk about their diagnosis, to see a psychiatrist, to seek treatment. Gradually, after a lot of advocacy work and the development of our science, learning about the brain, knowing the brain is another part of the body which has its own illness like any other areas in the body, we now have been able to remove the stigma much more, and people feel more comfortable about their diagnosis. Now, in such a highly emotional political atmosphere, it has been very emotional, right?
Certainly.
And there are two sides. Both sides are very emotional. Mm-hmm. When we bring up these issues, we end up with re-stigmatization. Basically, people are, especially when they are highly emotional, prone to stereotype. Then it is us versus them. Whether it is mental health, whether it is politics, whether it is race, whether it is ethnicity, whether it is different countries, whether it is refugees, it's us
them
versus
them. Them and us. Them and us.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, us, we are good, them are not good. So we are basically using psychiatric diagnosis, telling those who don't like the president that this is because of a psychiatric illness. And then how does that affect the perception of people on the both sides of the aisle about mental health, mental illness, and those who do have mental illness? Let's look at that one-third of the country who are supporters of the president.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we are open to a stereotype when emotions are high. Mm-hmm. How would they lump psychiatrists and psychiatry together, and how would they see us in the context of a lot of the stigma which also surrounds us as psychiatrists? Would they, like, let's say a conservative in a rural area who has been talking to their kids' teachers and they've been trying to convince them that this kid for ADHD needs psychiatric care, them seeing us as a bunch of liberals who are trying to push their political agenda? Not that I'm saying this is what is happening, But the way people would
might perceive this.
Exactly.
Effort.
How is it going to change the chance of them seeking help for their kid? How is it going to change the chance of them seeking treatment for themselves, following up on their treatments? How would they perceive their psychiatrist?
So you're worried it'll shut people down from seeking treatment?
Yeah, and changing the approach. And besides that, so one of the following up on removing the stigma, another factor that we have been successful over the course of several decades achieving has been to bringing empathy, right? When we bring a diagnosis, I use the example of ADHD. We say, hey, this is not a bad kid who doesn't listen in the class and always moving around. This is the disease. This is the ADHD. Basically, we are saying it's not you and it's the illness. So now I don't even know what will this motion achieve by exonerating the person and saying, hey, this is a mental illness.
Okay.
And not the person.
Two of the psychiatrists who are part of that group book have just posted a piece in Politico. They're defending speaking out. Dr. Bandy Lee, who met with members of Congress last week at their request to discuss the president's mental health and behavior, and also Dr. Leonard Glass. They say they are not violating the Goldwater Rule because they say they are not diagnosing Mr. Trump in any specific way. And here's their quote. It is not only acceptable but vitally necessary to have a public conversation about the mental state of our nation's leader. And they're saying their business is whether the president and the commander in chief has the capacity to serve in office. So how would you have us address concerns about traits? That's what they say they're talking about, the verbal aggressiveness, the boasting about sexual assaults, impulsiveness, rage reactions, taunting of a hostile nation with nuclear weapons, on and on. How would you have us address those concerns?
So a few issues. Number one, in terms of if you do or do not make a diagnosis versus a professional comment, both fit in the Goldwater Rule. But I don't want to get into technicalities. I'm not an ethics specialist, okay? But when it comes to making a diagnosis, you just mentioned several traits, negative traits, which have been discussed on the media and by political pundits since the time of the election and afterwards. If I came out and called this Trumpitis or flying spaghetti monster syndrome, what would that change? So my question is, like, I don't even know how much good these motions will do, because these behaviors have been available to the public. All these behaviors that you mentioned have been seen, and we all know that we don't like these behaviors. And we all know you don't need a psychiatric degree to know that past behavior predicts future behavior. So now me coming and telling you, hey, I want to put this label on these things that you already know, I don't know what is going to change. I am very curious to see how many Republican congressmen and women
minds are changed.
How many went to that meeting, and how many changed their mind.
Right.
So the idea, what happens, I believe, as a result of these motions, like a lot of other things in politics, those on your side will cheer for you and the other side will put you in the box of the bad, which may hurt our field. And that's where I am concerned. So I see a lot of patients. I see like 30, 40 patients a week. And my patients would come in during the campaign time. This 80-some-year-old lady would come in and excited saying that, hey, now that my depression is gone, I have the energy. I'm campaigning for Trump. She was very excited. In the afternoon, this other patient comes in and says how disgusted they are by the behavior of this candidate and how much they hate him. None of these people ask me, what's your political stance? As a person, as a private citizen, I feel very comfortable announcing how I feel about the politics to my friends and family and other people. But as a psychiatrist or as a physician, I'm in a sacred position of neutrality that the patient coming to me does not even think beforehand, hey, which side is this guy on? Yeah. So they just come in and very comfortably share their ideas. Yeah. And that was very impressive to me that they see me as a non-political entity, as a neutral person who's there to help them.
And that's an important part of therapy.
Exactly.
Dr. Arash Javanbacht is an assistant professor of psychiatry at Wayne State University, and we've put a link to his Washington Post editorial on the stateside page at michiganradio.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
It was a pleasure, Cindy. Thank you.